Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Are the political vultures circling the wagons, I wonder, in Fianna Fáil, are indeed taking on the wagons that the Micheál Martin, the leader, might be surrounding himself with? Because a Fianna Fáil TD says Micheál Martin should step aside as party leader when his term as Taoiseach ends in 2022. The party's disastrous result in the by-election over the weekend has led to renewed rumblings over his leadership. Mark McSherry, Barry Cowan, Jim O'Callaghan, all making rumblings over the weekend. The Fianna Fáil ministers urging members to support the Taoiseach amid suggestions a no-confidence motion could be tabled. Kildare TD James Lawless says such a move now would be inappropriate. But like many others, he also says that things could change down the line somewhat in terms of the leadership. Let's see what James Lawless had to say in regards to that.
We have to realise that we haven't connected with the people in the last by-election. We didn't connect particularly well in the 2020 general election. And I think that as a party who's in the business of winning seats and implementing policies, we need to look at how we offer ourselves, how we package ourselves. The obvious time for that conversation to take place would be there is a transition coming. We hold the Taoiseach's office until the end of next year. Coming into that Christmas, that would be the natural time for that.
James Lawless, coming into Christmas, the natural time for that. There's a present down the line for the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, and Fianna Fáil leader. The headline in The Independent this morning: Fianna Fáil rebels not ready to pull the trigger on the heave to oust Micheál Martin after election disaster. Let's find out indeed a man who has the finger on the pulse in a big way on all of these issues. Political correspondent with The Independent, John Downing. Good morning again, John. Fault your shock. Right, will he or won't he face a leadership challenge, John?
It looks less likely for the moment. I go back to a situation almost 5 years ago. Fianna Fáil did very badly in a by-election in Dublin South West. That was the one won by Paul Murphy. And on that occasion, I remember Willie O'Dea of Limerick saying that we're not surrounded, we're not coming down with potential young Winston Churchills here to replace the leadership. I think that's still the same. I think the absence of anybody else, I suppose also the fact that Micheál Martin has the Taoiseach's office, though even in good times or vastly better times for Fianna Fáil, occupation of the Taoiseach's office didn't stop them having a go at Charlie Haughey, for example. So I think less likely, but deep, deep unhappiness. Right now, Fianna Fáil are quite simply up in a heap.
Well, there's a number of TDs who have axes to grind, in particular Barry Cowan, I imagine, and he's been pretty forthright over the weekend. Jim Callaghan also bristling over his lack of promotion to a front bench ministerial position as well, but playing it cautiously at the weekend, maybe not trying to show his colours too obviously at this stage.
No, and I think he'd be wise. I mean, let's look. Fianna Fáil got 4.6% of the vote. Their vote was so abysmal, it was comparable to the fledgling Social Democrats, People Before Profit, and even one of the stalwart independents up there, Mannix Flynn, Councillor Mannix Flynn. So Jim O'Callaghan, it's his bailiwick, a difficult constituency for them always, and particularly for the last 40 years, but just the same, a national party in the capital city, an abysmal showing, much of that laid specifically at Jim O'Callaghan's door. Not the time for him to start.
You're quoted in The Independent, they have bragging rights, myths and real politics. How time will tell if this by-election in the heart of South Dublin is just a small suburban beauty contest. I wonder, John, and we'll come more to what you've written in just a couple of minutes' time, but Callaghan, of course, he's caught between a rock and a hard place, is he not? Because he was director of elections in this constituency, after all.
Yes, so that's the point.
Maybe put their performance in a proper context. Fianna Fáil has been struggling now for a couple of years, but is this result the nadir of their issues? Was it just a case of the candidate wasn't good enough, wasn't high profile enough?
The candidate, it turned out to be a poor candidate. It's difficult, it's getting harder and harder. By-elections put a national spotlight on you as well, far more than a general election where people could mullock away locally and do their bit. The national spotlight is also on you. That said, Deirdre Conroy turned out to be a very poor candidate who didn't perform at all well. Few of her media outings were any good, really, to be very blunt about.
And how much clutching at straws was the Taoiseach when he started quoting the number of by-elections that have been held, 30 or something, with 27 of them being won by opposition parties? You wrote a couple of days, John, by-elections are strange creations with a life of their own. Some of them have left an impact in various ways on our national politics. Others were passing strange things. Is this a passing strange thing?
It may well be, but it throws up issues, and it's not so much that it creates new issues, it's that it intensifies feelings around existing problems within both Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Greens, but most especially for Fianna Fáil, because this view is here for some time. More or less, you could say, we'll go back to the 8th of February last year, the general election of 2020. The three parties were more or less even, Stephen, a couple of percentage points. Sinn Féin, just that point or two ahead, but the other two behind them. Since then, the Fianna Fáil has been squeezed in what is increasingly seen to be a contest between Sinn Féin and Fine Gael, and strangely, the one that we always thought would persist through any kind of realignment of our politics and our political culture, that's Fianna Fáil, is suddenly the vulnerable one. And there is this brings a focus to other problems within the party. Disappointments, that lack of performance. You mentioned Barry Cohn. His difficulties in the immediate aftermath of the appointment of the government, which cost him his ministerial post, and various others who have the credentials to have senior jobs, but they're just not there for them. Other things, but mainly when they see themselves going down the tubes in the opinion polls and scoring very low in Dublin, where one third of the population is based, the alarm bells are ringing and have been.
But in your opinion, John Downing, is that all down to Micheál Martin, or is it just a case that the political lineup of this country and the political preferences of this country have changed enormously and irrevocably in recent years? Never again will Fianna Fáil, or indeed any party, enjoy the absolute swathe of control that Fianna Fáil previously enjoyed?
This is absolutely true. The two big beasts of Irish politics, usually, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, usually got 8 out of 10 of the votes at election day. That up to about 30 years ago. That we will never see that again. You're perfectly right to say that. Fianna Fáil, by far the bigger of those two big beasts, used to get anything up to 50% in elections. Last time out, they got the early 20s, 22, 23%. That's, and that is unlikely to change. I suppose the big problem for Fianna Fáil on Micheál Martin's watch was that he got them back on the road, he got a certain stability and so on, but then he hit a ceiling. The idea, their difficulty is not so much that they were in the early 20s in the last election in percentage points. The difficulty is right now they could be as low as half that, and when they go out in a given by-election, as they did last Thursday, they come back with less than 5%, quarter of what they got. I know the figures, we're talking apples and oranges a bit in the middle of all that, but that said, there is, these comparisons are being made, and with some reason.
Well, it's not all just about Fianna Fáil, of course, because Fine Gael were grasping at straws as well. I mean, this is a constituency where Garrett Fitzgerald was elected, and where Fine Gael, it's been the home turf, really, of Fine Gael for decades and decades. And all the Overadkar could offer was, well, we upheld the, or maintained the combined vote the two candidates got the last time out. Of course, a serious disgruntlement within that party as well, because there were opinions that the wrong candidate was picked and that the right candidate was pushed aside because of internal problems within Fine Gael. I'm talking about Kate O'Connell, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Fine Gael got 26% to Labour's 30% of the vote, and Labour won. By the way, a big day for Labour. They haven't had such a day since 28th of October 2011. And that was the day when they had 37 TDs at the time, and on that day, that was the presidential election day, Michael D. Higgins swept home for the first time, and they also won a by-election in Dublin West on that day. Since then, Labour have been going down and down, but back to Fine Gael in what was an absolute heartland for them. Usually, more usually, two seats out of four. Always has to be said, for the last 40 years particularly, a difficult area for Fianna Fáil. They've done a different kind of politics in this constituency. It used to be called Dublin South East. Since 2016, it's called Dublin Bay South. But they had, before the last election, they had the two out of four. They had Owen Murphy, whose resignation from Dáil politics caused this by-election, and they had Kate O'Connell. Now, Kate O'Connell is left in the position where she looks like she could have won it if she didn't, but it's a bit like the team that the county team manager didn't put out on the day after Kildare lose in the championship. The team that he didn't put out is always going to look better than the one that he did, you know.
Gareth Southgate might share that particular feeling from last night as well. Of course, we should finish in fairness by that tribute to Labour. But was that Labour vote much about the quality and the calibre of absolutely an outstanding candidate? I'm not saying that now from any political partisanship before the keyboard warriors start coming on me.
It was an element of, there was an element, a very fine candidate, a very fine campaign. Luck as well in that somebody who would have had the right to have been the Labour candidate, he stood aside, and Kevin Humphreys. So she had a clean run, a very united campaign. Very good candidate, very well known nationally, very good credentials, very, very well known locally, both herself and her family going back some distance. So, very special circumstances, yeah, all coming together for Labour. And Labour know, as well as anyone else, that by-elections are not always predictors of national trends. But I suppose they were very far down, and they haven't had a bit of luck in a long time.
And they'll
so
take
I suppose
it.
They could say they're entitled to it to some degree.
And there has to be some political irony in the fact that Labour scored this outstanding success in a constituency which basically its profile, its socio-economic profile, might not be the cohort that generally would vote left anyway. So all sorts of things to take from that election. And once again, his analysis, you can read him daily and in the Independent, in the either hard copy or online. John Downing, political correspondent with the Independent. Thanks again, John, for your time.
Thanks, Sam.
Quite fascinating indeed, the outcome of that election over the weekend. Up next, we're going to the Clan Maynooth Municipal District, and also in this hour, the former governor of Mountjoy Prison, John Lonergan, reflects on the Oberstown Annual Report 2020.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
The country's main detention facility for young people, Oberstown, says there's been a rise in the number of young people detained on longer sentences for very serious offences, including causing death. It also reveals that up to 70% of young offenders in the state's children's detention centre have a serious substance misuse problem. John Lonergan was governor of Mountjoy Prison until his retirement in 2010. The Tipperary man joined the Irish Prison Service as far back as 1968, has also served as governor of High Security Prison in Portlaoise from November 88 to May 1992. He also is the author of a number of books, including The Governor in 2010, Parenting and Raising Your Children in 2013, and also, I'm not sure if John Lonergan can, among your authors or books was Germ Warfare or Terror in Central Asia. We'll leave that one out for the moment. Good morning, John Lonergan. Thank you for joining us this morning. Now, John, in regards to Oberstown, to clarify for people, this is a detention centre, is it for under 18s?
For 12 to 18 year olds, yes. And it's, I suppose it mainly replaced St. Patrick's Institution, but it also replaced other institutions. So there's one central location nowadays called Oberstown, and it facilitates nationally any children between the ages of 12 and 16 that are sentenced to detention. In the old days, they were 16 to 21-year-olds went to St. Patrick's Detention Centre, but we had many industrial schools and reformatory schools taking in children from seven upwards until the age of criminal responsibility was increased in around 2011 to 12. And nowadays, we have one centre for boys and girls in Oberstown. We have actually the lowest number of young people in detention ever in the history of the state as a result of the Children's Act of 2001. We have to put it into perspective, but these results and this analysis and research would certainly indicate that there's a very chronic, small but very chronic group of young people, mainly boys. The vast numbers are boys detained in Oberstown, and some of the statistics that you mentioned are indeed alarming.
And indeed, the report for this centre shows a number of other factors as well. Aside from 70% having a substance misuse problem, there's 122 detained in Oberstown last year, 55 on detention order, 67 on remand, and the youngest detained was just 13. 75 young people with first-time admissions. The report saying that all but three of those detained in 2020 were male, while 18 of those staying in Oberstown last year, subject to care orders, 32 were from the travelling community. Interesting statistics there, John. Your comment on the vast majority, all but three of 122 being male.
Yeah, and that has been a consistent characteristic of the situation over many, many decades. We're going way back into the 30s and 40s when we really had thousands of children in all forms of detention and accommodation in the various different facilities. It was always and has always been overwhelmingly men or boys, and as the prison systems around the world are overwhelmingly male as well. So that's a very consistent factor. They're chronic cases, the addiction or the drug misuse level of 70% of children between the ages of 12 and 18 would very much reflect, Clem, the areas they come from, their social backgrounds. Early school leavers, very much from the most deprived areas, mainly urban areas, and many of them would be involved in criminality from 10 or 11 years of age. It's only the very, very chronic cases that are sent to detention nowadays. There's I just want to clarify about the remand numbers. The people, the numbers that are remanded in custody, these are children that have not been convicted or maybe subsequently convicted. Mm-hmm. So they're very short-term detention periods for children that have been remanded into custody. You'd often hear about it on a high-profile case where a child was put into detention awaiting trial. That only happened in a small number of cases, but I suppose it's the sentence number, the number that are sentenced is the most significant one, because they have been convicted and then sentenced. And of course, at that stage, many of them, believe it or not, even though they're still categorised as children between the ages of 12 and 18, as the law says, many of them would be hardened, really, in terms of criminality, even at that early stage. And the task is very, very difficult at that stage to try to, I suppose, intervene and try to redirect them away from criminality, because they're almost ingrained into it. And for many of them as well, which is something that most of your listeners wouldn't realise, there's a glamour attached to it, because they look up to older children or older young adults that they idolise, really, who are making a career out of criminality. And with all the trappings of it, like the financial trappings and the criminal status that these young men have. Mm. And these young lads, then, those children, are trying to imitate, and these are their role models. So it's a sort of a depressing picture, but we have to emphasise that it is a very small number of young people when you take it nationally. The numbers that are involved are very small, but they're really, really sad and chronic cases. And of course, the report also highlighted the high level of violence that many of those young people are committing. And that's another concern, because, as we know, the world is getting more violent and Ireland is getting more violent. And it's very concerning that young people between the ages of 12 and 16 are already very much involved in serious violent crime.
If the fundamental principle of any system of detention is rehabilitation, then in terms of that, you have to have those support services, particularly in the case of these young people, to stop that transition from, we'll say, the underage detention at Oberstown to transferring into the main prison system and that. And John, in regards to the services offered there, there seems to be quite a good range of services. The HSC Forensic Child and Adolescent Mental Health Service, otherwise known as CAMHS, received 76 referrals last year for psychiatric services. 115 concerns relating to the welfare and protection of young people were referred to what's called the designated liaison person. Of those, 87 related to external matters, and so on and so forth. Your experience, John, of what the support services and the availability of support services, rehab services at Oberstown might be?
Well, I would say that they're excellent, and that's my knowledge of it. I believe that there's very, very comprehensive and very good positive services available. The problem, of course, and the challenge is to be able to connect with and to get the young people to buy into the programs and the strategies and the treatments that are available. And that is not always the case. Many of these children have, as the figures highlight, psychiatric difficulties. They also have serious behaviour and conduct disorders that are not directly linked to mental health or mental illness, but they are very serious in terms of challenges. And education is at the core of it as well. You'll find that the vast numbers of dropped out of education are very reluctantly involved in education. And you can't force them. You can have all the services in the world, but you can't force those young people to get involved unless they're willing to do it. Now, part of the skill of the services in places like Oberstown would be to improve their motivation and that. And then we must also remember that when they're released, and they're all released eventually, they return often to circumstances that are very, very destructive and negative. And so I suppose what I'd be saying, really, the biggest challenge of all is to have more appropriate interventions at an earlier stage. And they're some of the major issues that we have, that we don't have often the services in the community to prevent this thing happening in the first place, because we need to get involved with the individuals and their families from as young as 3 and 4 years of age, because by the time they're 12, 13, 14, I'm afraid that this is very, very depressing, that is often too late at that stage.
Indeed. On that particular note, reflecting on the Oberstown 2020 annual report, and indeed having extensive experience, as I outlined at the outset of the interview, including writing that book on parenting, raising your child in Ireland, along with his autobiography, of course, The Governor, which we profiled on this programme. Hard to believe the time passes so quickly, John. You did that book back in 2010.
I know, it's frightening. You wouldn't want to think about it. What it means is we're getting old.
It does indeed. Always young at heart. is my motto.
Jug at heart. Yeah.
Former governor of Mountjoy Prison. Thank you indeed once again, John Lonergan, for that contribution in terms of what's happening at Orberstown. Now, some of the messages, somebody is very unhappy with James Lawless. Joy again, Micheál Martin is finished, typical Fianna Fáil, nothing will happen. Joy, you're very, very energised in regards to that and Fianna Fáil. Happy birthday to twins Lorraine Malone in Alamwood and Laura Cribben in Clane from Declan and Jaden, with lots of X's and O's coming in there. That's for Lorraine Malone in Alamwood and Laura Cribben in Clane. Twins. I wonder, was that from being the partners that came in? Clem, for me in any penalty shootout, I find by watching the taker's face as he walks up to the penalty spot can tell you a lot. Yes, I do the same thing. I often feel you can read it on the person's face how they're going to deal with it. The nervousness, on the other hand, in a player who fails tells it all. I tell you one thing, when you're taking a penalty, and anybody who has ever taken a penalty, the goal looks mighty small from that 12 metres, or is it 12 yards spot? 12 yards, of course. Or is it 11 yards? But when you stand in the goal, you'd wonder how anyone could miss. So it's all down to the political, psychological and maybe geographical perspective that you have as well. Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, nobody wants or wanted, has done nothing for the people of Ireland. He wanted to become Taoiseach. That's why Fianna Fáil are in the position they are today. Lots of messages coming in there. Owen.
Yeah, we're going to take a look at the latest CSO figures, Clem, for vehicles licensed for the first time. And just to give you the headline here, 4,980 new private cars were licensed in June 2021. If we break that into the first half of the year, then a total of 59,823 new private cars were licensed, an increase of 21.6% compared with the same period last year, but still 22.9% lower than in 2019.
Can I go down there, Owen, to electric and hybrid cars? Because we were talking about that later on in terms of 4,980 new private cars in June. In that, in terms of electric and hybrid cars, Owen.
Yeah, well, they continue to grow in popularity, and we know that just anecdotally from people getting in touch with the programme. 31.9% of all new cars licensed in the first half of the year are electric and hybrid cars, compared with 18.7% of new cars which were licensed in the first half of last year. The combined number of new electric and hybrid cars licensed in the first half of 2021 was 107.9% greater than those licensed in the same period in 2020. Mm.
Now, motor caravans, we all know about staycations and all of that, and it seems that's reflected in the sale of motor caravans.
Yeah, and even I know a couple of people who have bought the likes of caravans and campervans over the last couple of months, because obviously staycations are huge this year. The number of motor caravans licensed in the first half of 2021, 79.3% greater than those licensed in the same period back in 2019. There were 753 motor caravans licensed in the first half of this year, compared with just 255 in the same period in 2020 and only 420 in 2019.
And in point four and the licensing figures there on, in regards in June 2021, the most popular models of cars.
Yeah, so if we go down through them, then the most popular model of car, Volkswagen 1021, was the most popular make of a new private car licensed, followed by Skoda 533, Toyota 423, Hyundai 323, and Kia 283. Together, these five makes represent the 51.9% of all new private cars licensed in June of 2021.
And indeed, Owen, in the first half of 21, just going back to electric vehicles and the final point there for the moment, Kildare is among the areas which percentages are being listed for.
Yeah, well, Dublin had the highest proportion of new private cars licensed in the first half of the year at just under half, 45.4%. This was followed then by Cork, 10.3%, and as you mentioned, Kildare, 5.2%.
Now, that's for electric vehicles, fully electric. What about hybrid vehicles?
Dublin, again, also had the highest proportion, 37.2%. Again, followed by Cork, 13.1%. And Kildare, 5.1% as well. And they're the latest figures from the CSO. And Clem, just before we take a break, moving away from this, I just got a couple of phone calls from listeners wondering if a boil water notice is still still in place for the areas around Castledermot, Kilkee, Ballitore that we mentioned on Friday, and I can let you know that it is still in place, so just continue to boil the water, and no doubt Ciara will have more on it in our news bulletins throughout the course of the day.
Yeah, it is, and it's going to be there for a while, a number of days at the very least, if possibly even weeks. As Owen said, Ciara Plunkett and our news team will keep you posted. Thanks, Owen.